From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson talks about securing the vote in Detroit and statewide.
Our election system has been stress tested by three elections already this year. And in all of them, voting by mail has been proven to be absolutely safe and secure, even in record numbers.
She also briefs us on the new Michigan Redistricting Commission. Later on, we check in with the activist who launched the ballot drive to put redistricting in citizens' hands.
There were so many hurdles and obstacles, and thankfully we navigated them all pretty successfully.
And we meet Lady Ace Boogie, a rapper from West Michigan calling it quits to focus on family and herself.
You know, my last album was Don't Box Me In, right? So I was kind of feeding off of that, like, don't box me in. I want to be free from all these labels, free from all of these things that we are expected to do.
Those stories and more just ahead on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, a Michigan MC hangs up the mic to spend more time on herself and her family.
Just like all of the norms and all of the things that people expect you to be and expect you to conform to, I just want to be free from that.
That's later in the show, but first, Michigan has selected the names of 13 citizens for the job of redrawing the state's political maps. The drawing happened on a live stream in mid-August. This is a process that was set in motion in 2018, when voters approved a brand new method by which laypersons, not party bosses or office holders, would do the work of redrawing congressional districts. Now, 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 5 independents have been chosen. Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson is here to talk more about the commission's work. Secretary Benson, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So the commission is drawing up boundaries that will apply for the first time in the 2022 election cycle. What's their first task?
That's right. Well, the first task is getting everyone together. We will have our first meeting in mid-September. And I'm really just thrilled to be able to connect and meet all of these randomly selected commissioners who will be a part of Michigan's history. They will meet with a number of experts, people who have done this work in the past in Michigan and are familiar with the federal law as well nationwide. And we just want to put them in front of as many people and get them as much information as possible so that they can then be empowered to make the decisions they'll have to make independently moving forward to prepare our maps for the future.
The decisions that the commission must make are to be based on census data, and there have been problems conducting the census in a pandemic year. Detroit's response rate is still below 50% as we're having this conversation, and the Trump administration has shortened the Census Bureau's timeline by, I believe, about 30 days. Will the census be able to deliver the information the commission needs?
I hope so. We've certainly been advocating for that. And it is challenging because so much is out of our control in that regard. I mean, people can still control their responses to the census, and we want to encourage everyone while they can to respond. But one of the things that we now have to plan for is that we will be getting the data later than we expected, but the commission will still have to submit their maps by November of next year.
Well, how does that,
as much time.
How does that change the commission's work?
Well, they won't have as much time to consider maps, look at the data, because you can't really draw a district map until you know the number of people in the district. And you won't have that data until perhaps mid-2021, as opposed to in January 2021. And when the deadline is still November 2021 for our maps, that just shortens the timeline in which they'll have the window in which the commission will have to draw the lines.
Right. Are you satisfied the makeup of the commission will do justice to where our population lies?
I am thrilled with the makeup of the commission. I mean, that said, I don't know any of the commissioners yet. I have not met them. But just reading their background and reading the press coverage and the interviews that have been done, this is truly some well-intentioned individuals, all understanding and really committed to the goals of the voters who created the Citizens Commission to begin with, making sure it's independent, citizen-led, transparent. And so I'm very optimistic now, having connected with and identified these 13 individuals, that they're up to the task. And we'll be, working with them. I'm the secretary without a vote on the commission. I'm basically the administrator to make sure they've got everything they need to do their jobs. But I'm excited to sit back and watch what they do.
I did have a question about that. I'm not sure if I weren't paid to pay attention to politics, if I would necessarily know where to start. The commission can hire statisticians and other nonpartisan experts to advise them. These are not people who spend a ton of time in Lansing. How will they know who to call? Do you think that they will be relying on your office exclusively for their information?
I don't think they will be relying on our office exclusively for information, because even in the first meeting that we are hosting with them, we're going to be putting them in front of the national experts in the redistricting world and the folks in the state who've been doing this work for quite some time. So we're trying to connect them with the people who've done this in the past so that they don't need to recreate the wheel, but it's then up to them as to, once they have the information, how to proceed. And that's really, I think, the goal of a truly independent commission.
As a public body, are their meetings subject to open meeting laws?
Yes. And in fact, the commission is required to have at least 15 town halls all across the state next year, taking testimony and listening to citizens about their views on what they want the districts to look like. And then once they draw the maps, there's a period for public comment as well. So I'm very optimistic that these commissioners, again, are up to the task of engaging the public, and all of their communications, all of their meetings will be open to the public as a result.
Do you have concerns that the commission's going to have to meet remotely for at least the foreseeable future?
I do, and I think there are ways, and we're finding ways to build connections and still get work done. And in some cases, the fact that the commissioners are from all across the state, meeting remotely may be a more efficient way, regardless of the pandemic, for them to operate at least for the foreseeable future, as you say. So I don't think that's going to slow down the work. I'm much more concerned about the release of the census data than anything else. But that is, you know, we're not the only state that is dealing with that. And, you know, I'm sure that we'll find ways to still get the work done. The commission will, at least, in light of those challenges.
Secretary Benson, while we've got you, this week it was announced the state would work with Wayne County for preparedness on the November general election. Can you tell us anything more about what that relationship will look like?
Well, yes. And as a voter and as a resident of the city of Detroit, I'm committed to ensuring that our elections are safe, secure, and accessible, not just statewide, but in our largest jurisdiction in the city of Detroit. But what we've done is, with the clerks and under the clerk's leadership, brought together not just my office, but civic leaders, our sports teams, our county officials, all to meet the needs of the city in this very challenging election cycle that we found, I think the city knows, no one can go it alone successfully. So with that, we were able to work with the city to catalog many of the challenges that it encountered, not just in August, but in the past, and provide solutions or develop solutions and provide resources to execute and implement those solutions. For example, we're opening satellite clerk offices all around the city. Instead of 7, there will be 24. We're installing drop boxes for people to return their ballots across the city. Instead of 2, as there were in August, there will be close to 40. We're also going to be doing more educational sessions as well, doing everything we can to ensure ballots are counted accurately, improving training and recruiting more election workers. So it's all hands on deck. That's the bottom line, and we're all in this together, and we're going to succeed.
Right. President Trump encouraged his supporters in North Carolina to vote twice in November, once by mail and once in person, to test the system's reliability and fairness. I saw Attorney General Nessel tweeting, "Don't try this at home. I will prosecute you." How would Michigan catch that if someone did choose to try to vote twice?
Well, importantly, our election system has been stress tested by 3 elections already this year. And in all of them, voting by mail has been proven to be absolutely safe and secure, even in record numbers. And that's because we do have protections in place to ensure election officials track and verify every ballot they send and receive. And in every instance, works to ensure that only one person gets only one vote. And then if there's any irregularities, we work with the Attorney General's office to investigate and prosecute. The signature match is a key component of that. Every voter must sign an application just to get a ballot. And then once you have a ballot, in order for it to be counted, you must sign the envelope that it's returned in. And that signature must match the signature we have on file. And then you only get to do that once. It's uploaded immediately into our database, into our voter file that you have voted as soon as that ballot is verified and tabulated. And so there's really no option for two votes from one person. The second vote would be invalidated, however it's received, or, you know, any alternative votes. And I should emphasize, we don't ever see that happening, but if it happened, we would catch it.
Just one last question. I know your office has been extremely busy dealing with a deluge of people trying to renew tabs and licenses and state IDs by September 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Do your staff even know how many vehicle registrations might be expired overdue? I mean, is there even a ballpark number?
Well, yes, we've been tracking that. And, you know, importantly, every year, about 90% of vehicle registrations are renewed by this time. And we're at just under that at 84%, at least in the numbers I've recently seen. So importantly, people can renew their vehicle tabs over the mail, over online, or at one of our kiosks at Myers and Kroger's, or at any branch office self-service station. You don't need an appointment to renew your vehicle tabs. And so we want people to know that. They don't need to come into our branch office to renew their tabs. And that's mostly the case with driver's licenses and state IDs as well. And for the cases where you do have to come in person, we have opened our branch offices 2 hours extra every day. And those appointments are available right now. We've released 200,000 more appointments through the end of September, just for folks who need to renew their licenses in person.
What should people do if they're feeling nervous about either what's going on with the Postal Service right now or whether their precinct's going to have enough volunteers to really keep the vote running smoothly?
Well, yes, the most important thing, and we've talked a lot about our plans that we're doing to ensure everyone, every voter receives their ballots and can return them on time. But just as we have our plans, voters need to have plans as well. And one of the best things voters can do right now is plan, not based on deadlines, but when things start. And meaning you can request to vote by mail or your absentee ballot in Michigan right now. And clerks will begin sending out ballots or having them available in their offices for early voting on September 24th. So know that and make a plan to vote and ensure that your voice is heard this year.
Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
After the break, we'll speak with the founder of Voters Not Politicians, the group whose mission has been to end gerrymandering in Michigan.
The disdain from a lot of political insiders about a bunch of regular citizens trying to actually have a say and create a new process. It was really eye-opening.
That's after the break. Stay tuned. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. As you just heard, Michigan's new redistricting commission is beginning work on a brand new process for drawing up the state's legislative districts. This is a subject that has huge effects for how we're represented and the balance of power in Michigan. Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson told us what's on her mind about the commission's work, and we turn now to Katie Fahey. She founded and led the group Voters, Not Politicians, which successfully campaigned for the ballot initiative that changed redistricting in 2018. Since then, she started a new nonprofit called The People. Part of its mission is to take lessons learned in Michigan to other places. Katie Fahey, welcome back to Stateside.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So when we talked to the Secretary of State just now, Jocelyn Benson said she was feeling mostly pretty good about the selection of the commission and the work ahead. Can I get your analysis of how the process has gone so far?
I think all things considered, especially needing to adjust with getting the word out about this and having people apply and get notarized applications, I think I agree. Overall, it's been really exciting to see how many thousands of people are already excited in the very first time for citizens to be the ones who draw the lines here in Michigan.
What do you think of the range of people who were in contention? We had earlier in the year a list of 200 names. After some state leaders had a say in winnowing that down, we were down to about 180. Did you find it to be a representative sample of Michigan?
I thought it was fairly representative. I would have loved to see more of the applicant pool before it even got to the 200 being more diverse and making sure we got more representation. But I think overall, I was pretty satisfied with seeing the diversity, not only in geography and race, but also in age, which I think was really exciting.
At the point at which there were 180 still in contention, that was the pool from which the final selection came, there were only 8 people in that group who lived in the city of Detroit. Is that enough?
You know, I think with Detroit being such a big city and having such a high population, I'm really glad that with the final 13, there was somebody who lives in Detroit who's made it onto that commission. If they hadn't, which there was no control for because it is a randomly drawn kind of like a lottery that ends up choosing the last 13 people, I think 8 does make it harder to guarantee statistically that somebody would have been from Detroit. And I do think that would have been a missed opportunity. Looking at the next set of lines, Michigan may lose a congressional district. And likely where that adjustment will have to happen is in the Detroit area, which is why I think it's especially important to have somebody actually from that community being able to listen to other voters who live in Detroit, but also be able to bring in their own unique perspective.
I believe there are actually 2 from Detroit, Juanita Curry and Brittany Callum. So at least there will be 2 voices from Detroit, maybe a couple others from the metro area. You founded and led Voters Not Politicians all the way through 2018. And then you left last year for this new venture. Can you tell us about the people and what you're hoping to do with it?
Yeah, so what we saw, you know, I made a Facebook post that said, hey, I want to end gerrymandering in Michigan. If you want to help, let me know, smiley face. And that's what ended up kicking off the petition process to amend our state constitution. And being just a regular person, you know, my background was not in politics at all. I was just figuring out how to navigate the political process. There were so many hurdles and obstacles, and thankfully we navigated them all pretty successfully, but there's so many things that could have gone wrong. And being a part of that process and also just seeing, I guess, the disdain from a lot of political insiders about a bunch of regular citizens trying to actually have a say and create a new process, it was really eye-opening and left me wanting to take the lessons that we learned, the tools that we built, and be able to pay it forward and make it so that it was a little bit easier for the next group of citizens who really wanted to work on a systemic democracy reform issue, to be able to focus more on actually talking about the issue than having to really figure out, okay, how do we easily gather all these signatures, navigate the legal challenges, fundraise millions of dollars. All those things are a lot of focus off of actually talking about the thing that you're trying to pass.
Could you say more about the things that you learned during the process? I mean, you weren't actually working on redistricting. You were working on a ballot initiative. But I'm curious about the technical things that surprised you.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan campaign finance law, super interesting. Having to document not only every single dollar that comes in, but also all of the donations that people made. So for us, we did things like built our own clipboards to gather signature petitions, or somebody actually carved a dragon out of wood because gerrymandering, the original shapes kind of looked like a dragon. So we used that to raise awareness. And all of those things, you had to make sure there was actually a campaign disclaimer on saying, you know, paid for by our ballot committee, even though it was all donated, and tracking all of that and having to make sure that it all goes into the same, you know, computer database and we do that in the right way was really interesting. When we were trying to get training to do it, and this might seem somewhat standard, but there was only like one webinar offered once every couple months, and it was in the middle of the day, 4 hours, and you had to guarantee 17 people would be on the webinar, something like that. And all of us had day jobs. And so taking that much time, how do you do that? Who are the right people? All those kinds of things are really interesting. Learning about the board of canvassers, those are the folks who actually approve the petition language. They help make sure that you've got, you know, your font size the right way, that you're including the right parts of the Constitution. I never realized how many steps in that process there really were. And also that those 4 people, you know, 2 are nominated by Democrats, 2 are nominated by Republicans. It can be a political body.
So what kinds of initiatives are you working on to share what you learned? I also wondered, like, what states have reached out to you to try to see if they can get something similar going?
Yeah, well, in redistricting, it's been an exciting but kind of crazy year, especially with all of the different states handling COVID in different ways. Gathering signatures was prohibited in a lot of states. We were helping out on the redistricting front in Virginia, in Oregon, Nevada, Arkansas, Oklahoma, North Dakota, did an event with Texas, and Nebraska. So that was a really, it was a really big year, I think, with the lines needing to be redrawn after this election. A lot of states had this on their mind. Unfortunately, not as many were able to actually qualify for the ballot, but interesting because there are definitely Democrat gerrymandered states and Republican gerrymandered states. But we've also been hearing a lot about opening primaries. In Michigan, you don't have to register for a political party, but in a lot of other states, you do. And a lot of citizens don't want to tell the government what party they're going to vote for. And so they want a primary system where they can easily choose during the primary. So that was pretty popular, as well as ranked choice voting, being able to rank your preference of which candidates you like best. So we've been helping out in Massachusetts there and in a lot of states actually exploring that. And we're doing a lot of work in New Hampshire as well.
So much was different when this process started moving forward, when you founded the group and got things underway. I mean, here the commission is right now in a situation where, as we heard from Secretary Benson, I mean, the census may not be able to deliver the data the commission needs until much later than expected. And also, there's the question of whether census responses will give the kind of data model that the commission is really going to need. I mean, no one could have foreseen the pandemic, but I guess I'm asking if you think that this is still a time in which the kind of change that you wanted can be realistically achieved.
I do think it is. We actually had the commission starting its work before, in regular years, the census data would be available. And that was really purposeful because taking an input from the community, especially for the first time ever, millions of people will actually be able to give their opinion and have folks who are required by our constitution to listen and weigh that opinion on how our district lines will be on for the next decade of representation here in Michigan. And so that kind of work can still be done. Now they'll have to adjust how much weight certain citizens, depending on where they lived, or how much is that going to have and based on the census, but actually figuring out all of the redistricting criteria, figuring out how they can listen to other people, even just understanding the rules that this commission wants to operate by. We left a lot of that up to them. And I think this time can be used really wisely to do that. The reality is, too, these lines are going to be drawn. We need to be able to adjust these lines in time for the next election. And so I'd rather have this process in place than have the legislature being able to manipulate the lines for their own benefit or for their political party's benefit.
You know, it also feels like the political mood of the country is in a different place than it was in 2018. There's a lot of conversation about what should be different about America coming out on the other side of the pandemic. Do you think that what you have to offer is a good fit for the kind of changes that people are asking for?
I do think so. I think what's really exciting is I see across the country that a lot of people don't feel heard. They don't feel heard from their legislators, their local government, maybe even their neighbors. And this process is so different than any other one that we have at the state level of government that I think it offers an opportunity for communities to actually come together and continue to have some of these conversations, to come together and talk about, for our city, for our community, our region, whichever way you want to define it, what do we feel like isn't being addressed? And how do we want these lines to be drawn to make sure that our community can stand together and actually have a representative who's going to care about these topics in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? To have a process that actually invites people in, that's actually transparent, makes all data information available. I think we need more of that in general. It seems like a lot of decision-making or processes are what are being questioned, whether it's COVID or related to policing. And here's one system in government where it's actually hopefully going to be an example of doing things in a different way. And I hope that people will like it and want to see this adopted in other places in government, maybe at the local level or in other types of commissions. What you see in states who pass similar independent citizens redistricting commissions, Arizona and California, is citizens liked it so much that they did start actually taking this concept and applying it to even smaller forms of government.
Such as
school boards, local city commissions, and other decision-making bodies.
Katie Fahey is the executive director of The People, and she used to direct the nonprofit group in Michigan, Voters Not Politicians, which successfully campaigned for redistricting changes in 2018. Katie, thanks for talking to us. We hope you're doing well.
Thank you so much. You too.
in our latest edition of Cheers to Michigan. Michigan Radio's Lester Graham and mixologist Tammy Coxon explore how it is that absinthe got such a bad reputation and why it was banned for a century.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Lester.
That's Tammy Coxon with Tammy's Tastings. I see you've got a bottle of absinthe there. I'm a fan of absinthe.
Well, I'm glad you're a big fan of absinthe, Lester, because this drink is going to use an entire ounce of it.
An ounce? A whole ounce?
I know. We're used to absinthe in drinks.
Yeah, a little quarter ounce maybe, if that much.
Right, or a rinse on the glass. No, this is an absinthe cocktail.
Wow. Well, what kind of absinthe are you using?
I'm using Long Road Distillers absinthe.
Oh, they've been making absinthe for a while now, yeah.
They released this absinthe last Halloween. It's their special Halloween release. And I decided on this cocktail today because Long Road was just nominated as Best Distillery in a variety of categories in the USA Today 10 Best Reader's Choice Travel Awards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
About time Michigan and the Beer City got a little love.
They have gotten love from this particular award before. This is their fourth time in the Best Craft Specialty Spirits category. And there's nothing that's more craft specialty spirit than absinthe.
Well, the last time we were there for a book thing, Cheers to Michigan, at Long Road. And they have a shelf of bottles with medals. So it's not surprising that they're winning more medals because they've got a history of doing that.
They do. And they make great products. So I'm really happy to have a chance to use a little more of this absinthe than I have before. Because, you know, a bottle of absinthe for most people is a lifetime supply.
For most people. So a whole ounce of absinthe in this drink. What else is in it?
So, ounce of absinthe, and then an ounce and a half of Aperol.
Ooh, that sounds super sweet. Okay.
So Aperol is interesting, right? Because it's sweet and it's bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to balance a little bit. And then an ounce of lemon juice.
Okay.
So we've got some balance for
a
the
whole
sweet
ounce
there.
Of lemon juice.
Whole ounce of lemon juice. Quarter ounce of simple syrup. Mouthfeel, balancing out that lemon juice. A dash of orange bitters.
Mm-hmm.
That's all four ingredients. Shake that up with ice. Strain it into a martini or a coupe glass. And then garnish it with a flaming orange twist.
Oh, nice little touch. Somebody was asking us at one of those book events, what's the fanciest garnish you can use? What's going to impress your guest the most? And it was like, well, that's easy, a flaming orange, and it's really easy to learn how to do. You can find all kinds of instructions online, and you did it for this one, too. That's nice.
Yes, but as you saw, there's a lot of variability. It depends a lot on the oranges that you get, and this orange was not so great. So.
I find small oranges work better than large oranges.
It really has to do with the texture of the skin, and I'm kind of glad you didn't catch my pathetic flaming on camera. I would have been shamed.
I just have you holding the orange peel and a lighter, and that's it.
So what do you know about the history of absinthe, Lester?
Well, there's the rumor that Van Gogh allegedly used a lot of yellows and greens because absinthe messed with his mind, but that's about all I've ever heard, and I assume that's a myth.
Yes. They also say that that's why he cut his ear off. Absinthe was very, very alcoholic, and that's really what was going on, but it got this reputation as being the green fairy and this hallucinogenic product. None of that was true, not then, not now, but it got a bad reputation and ended up being banned in most of the world starting in 1912. And the reason that they gave for that ban was a guy named Jean Lanfray, and this drink is named for him.
In what way?
Because he would drink from 2 to 2 every day.
Oh, man. That's not good.
And so let's be clear. Jean Lanfray was not a nice guy. The reason they banned absinthe is because he killed his whole family. And they blamed that on the absinthe. Now, he had also had, on the day he had 2 glasses of absinthe, he also had, you know, 2 bottles of wine and several brandies, stopped for a sandwich, had a cup of coffee, had some more beer. The absinthe was the least of his troubles that day. But the French wine lobby was a little upset that absinthe had kind of gotten into their market share. And so they kind of went on a misinformation campaign and got it banned all around the world.
I bet you in 1912, the French wine industry had some pretty good lobbyists. I mean, you know, you think of wine and you think of France often.
And at the time, they were recovering from this big phylloxera epidemic that had wiped out the wine grapes throughout France. And so they were just starting to get back into the market. And it was hard to compete with something bottled at 160 proof.
That means absinthe was banned for almost a century. I mean, when was it allowed in the U.S. again?
I think it was 2007 that the law was changed.
So very close to a century long, and now it's pretty popular in the craft cocktail movement. I won't drink to Lafrey, and I'm not going to drink to 2-2, but I will drink to the return of absinthe. So let's take a taste.
All right. It's a lot of history packed into one cocktail.
I would not have guessed there's a full ounce of absinthe in there, but it's definitely there. I mean, it's the predominant ingredient in there, no matter how much Aperol you put in there or lemon juice or anything else. But it's, I think it's really tasty. But as I recall, during classes, you said you weren't much of an absinthe fan.
So I don't love that black licorice flavor that people associate with absinthe. That comes not from the wormwood, which was the supposed to make you crazy part, but it comes from anise. So Longroad is using star anise and fennel, which also have that kind of licorice-y flavor, but not in a super black licorice-y all sorts kind of way. So that's already got a leg up and it's going for me. And in a cocktail, I can appreciate absinthe. I love Aperol. I like that bitter, sweet, citrusy combination. So the Aperol is doing a lot here to balance the absinthe for me. But I really enjoy the combination.
It is good. Cheers.
Cheers.
Next up, West Michigan hip-hop artist Lady Ace Boogie calls it quits. She's starting a new business and says she wants a little bit more time to focus on herself.
Quite frankly, I'm trying to break generational poverty, and I can't do that by recording a bunch of music, releasing it, and not getting it to where I want to get it.
That's right after the break. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Bear. Grand Rapids hip-hop artist Lady Ace Boogie is hanging it up. What do you do? Feeling not alone, feeling like it's just you. In a cold world, sunny days get blue. Feeling so stuck, feeling like you can't move. I'm so out of my mind, I'm through. Dear God, I'm trying, but most days all I do is cry. Heart so heavy, all in pieces. Can't keep backing like everything be just no. I'm so tired. After years on stage as one of Michigan's most visible artists, and one of the few LGBTQ-identifying artists on the national stage, Linda Tellis Aguilar has decided to get away from the spotlight, work behind the scenes, and attend to herself. Alone, all by myself, no one beside me, no one to blame, no one but I have to find me. She played a final show at the Listening Room as part of the Listening Lawns outdoor series a little earlier this month. Lady Ace Boogie joining us now. Welcome to Stateside.
Cheers.
How'd that final show go?
It was honestly, it couldn't have went any better. You know, a lot of people were expecting to have like a bigger venue. It would have made sense, you know, if we weren't dealing with the pandemic. It would have probably been at something like the Intersection or the Pyramid Scheme.
Yeah, seriously, did you ever think you'd play a finale show outdoors?
No, I did not actually. But it was really intimate. It was great. You know, it was only 100 people there, but it felt like, I don't know, I can't explain it. It was just like, I'm still kind of, you know, floating a little bit.
Yeah.
From that night. It was just a perfect night.
You know, debuts are easy, but finales are kind of hard.
Yeah.
What did you need that moment to reflect for you?
You know, I don't know. I kind of, it was kind of an interesting moment because one, it was obviously a farewell for now. And also it was a dedication performance to my father who passed August 2nd. And so it was kind of bittersweet in a sense. Like I didn't look at it so much as a farewell as much as I did. I want to make him proud and I want to make sure everybody leaves this show with their soul just full, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I was at with it.
What about the album? What colors and notes did you want it to hit?
You know, just not holding back. I struggled with releasing it, you know, with like radio edit versus just leaving, you know, all the raw words that I actually wrote on the record. Mm-hmm. But I ended up having the engineer edit some of it. But I really wanted to just kind of let loose and not hold back. A lot of the music that I put out has been clean and positive, and which is you know, a reflection of myself. But also, sometimes I forget to have fun. And so with this project, I really wanted to just have some fun and, you know, mess around with different sounds and I worked with a couple of different new engineers that I haven't worked with in the past, and producers, and also artists that I haven't worked with in the past. So just kind of getting outside of that thing that I'm used to, outside of my comfort zone, and really pushing the pen and pushing the sound.
There's a track on the record called Free. That shows a side that I think a lot of artists are like not even, that they're just afraid to even show others. And that's like a public acknowledgement that being an artist is really hard.
Yeah, yes.
And that there's a cost. Free from all religion, free from all diseases, free from this depression, free. I just wanna be free. F-R-E-E, that spells free. Be who I want, love who I want, free. Girl, if I want, man, if I want, free. Gay, if I want, bad, if I want, free. Choose how I want, move, how I want, free. Damn if I do, damn if I don't, free. Ain't no shackles up on my feet. Let me break it down for you now. I got time for ya. Humble for a while. Now I'm dead, I ain't got time for it. Haters wanna see me on my back. I feel bad for them. That ain't gonna happen, but my words, you can count on it. What did you want people to understand about that?
You know, I touch on a few different things. Mostly just like all of the norms and all of the things that people expect you to be and expect you to conform to. I just want to be free from that. You know, like a lot of times I get misgendered, or people, you know, say I'm this or say I'm that, or expect these different things from me. And so it really was just me wanting to just let loose and saying, I want to be free from all of these things. And, you know, and Stephen Malcolm, which is the feature on the track, he kind of went a different angle. He's going through a transition where he's going from Christian hip hop to hip hop. And so he kind of touched on that. But for me, it was really touching on just all the things that, that, you know, my last album was Don't Box Me In. Right. So I was kind of feeding off of that, like, don't box me in. I want to be free from all these labels, free from all of these things that we are expected to do.
Right. What parts of you will be relieved to be less public in the next stage of your life?
You know, I think it's the pressure of like just being present all the time. I've done my very best to be extremely present, not only for, you know, my releases, my events, but for other people as well. You know, there's been nights where I've been to 10 different shows, you know, and I'll still support, but it's taking a step back and looking at it from more of a business aspect. And one thing I want to kind of clear up, and I don't know if we're going to touch on this later, but mm-hmm. I'm not completely letting go. My current catalog, I'm still going to continue to push on social media platforms or online platforms. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to be recording any more music or doing performances that don't take me to that next level.
Right.
You know, I'm wore out. You know, I've done so many. I've done events like on weekends. I can say I've counted about 6 or 7 events that I've done just myself, on top of going out and supporting other events. And so it really wears you down.
You know, in any music community, but maybe especially in Western Michigan, it feels like there's such a premium on being part of the community and supporting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it feels like that's the only way that artists will be able to fill the kind of rooms that they need, is by enlisting help. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it sounds like that's got some real consequences for life and sanity.
Oh, yes, it does. It really does. And like you said, like it's a huge emphasis in West Michigan. Like, if you don't support music, then you don't support music. And I think the community does a great job at supporting each other. But also, one thing that I've kind of identified and why I'm taking a step back is that artists do not have the help that they need. There's a ton of artists. There's a ton of fantastic artists out there, but there isn't anyone taking a step back and saying, how can I get this artist to the next level? Which is kind of where I ran into that issue of like, it's just me. You know, I don't have a manager. I don't have, a publicist. I don't have a team of people who are helping me move things to the next level. And so I want to be that person for artists who deserve it, and artists who are working hard to, you know, move things to the next level.
You know, the pandemic feels like it has been a moment for a lot of people to rethink a lot of stuff.
Ooh,
and
yes.
You're not the first artist that I've talked to who has mentioned the fact that life and livelihood could really use another look and maybe some fresh ideas right now. I mean, just in the time that you've been writing and performing, you know, the digital music catalog has kind of gone through a complete collapse, and in some cases revival for artists who, you know, who do sell work on vinyl. But the whole question of how you make a living as an artist has not gotten much better than it has since Napster kind of undermined durable music sales. When did you start coming to this realization that, you know, something needed to change?
You know, honestly, just focusing so much on the performing and not allowing myself time to do anything else. You know, there's so many different elements to being a successful artist. And I would say, as far as the performing goes, like, I was getting a lot of great opportunities opening up for major artists, you know, Lizzo, Nas, Bone Thugs and Harmony, ASAP Rocky. I've done a lot of shows with a lot of great artists, but it wasn't doing, you know, what I thought it was going to do. So being able to say that I opened up for this artist and opened up for that artist, it just didn't really move me to that next level the way that I thought it would. And so, you know, deciding to take a step back and focus on my catalog, pushing it digitally and not just, you know, releasing music, having an album release show and, you know, selling CDs, selling merch, doing a bunch of shows and not really focusing on getting my music out to the masses. And so the pandemic really gave me the opportunity to take a step back and say, okay, wow, I'm not doing any more performing. What am I doing? You know, not only from a financial standpoint, but just in general, it was a huge wake up call,
Yeah. Do you think that if this is a moment for rethinking where the goalposts lie in music, maybe especially for hip hop, how would you like to see our standard of success change?
Man, you know, that's a good question. I've been trying to figure that out myself. Like, what does success mean? I mean, success for me doesn't mean the same for other people. I do think that it's getting a little foggy, you know, because you have so many robots and scammers and things that, you know, that you don't know what's real views, what's real plays, what's anything these days, you know?
Like maybe someone gets on your SoundCloud and all of a sudden you've got, 5,000 plays coming from overseas. It's like, are those really fans or are they just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's kind of muddy waters. One thing I will say... something that I've been able to really be not validated in a sense, but just affirming is that, you know, having a sold out show or, you know, doing events and seeing people show up, you know, that's real. You know, having conversations with people and them telling you how much you've impacted them over the years, I know that's real, you know? And so that's been beautiful. And I'm going to miss that intimacy with my listeners and with my, you know, my followers. But again, it's for me, in order to feel successful in a sense, it's I need to take it to the next level and not just open up for major artists, but get an opportunity to tour with a major artist. You know, I feel like I've earned that right. And so I really need to focus on, you know, my online presence so that I can get to that point.
We're talking today with Grand Rapids hip hop artist Lady Ace Boogie. Do you mind telling us where you've been holed up during the pandemic and just how you're spending your time?
Yeah, actually, downtown Kalamazoo. Myself and my wife live downtown Kalamazoo. I spent a lot of time in Grand Rapids as well. That's kind of my home, regardless of where I am. Grand Rapids is definitely my home. And, you know, I've been up until, you know, August 2nd, when my father passed away, I was taking care of my father and, you know, and trying to release this album. And also, I actually started recording the album in March and finished the album late July. So yeah, I spent a lot of time doing that, traveling back and forth from Ohio, just, you know, moved my dad to Ohio when his health started to decline a bit. And, so I was spending a lot of time on the road, a lot of time in the studio. Also, I'm launching another business, Real Time Cleaning. I'm launching in October. So I've been working with that, getting that launched as well.
A cleaning business. Is this something that you've been thinking about doing for a long time?
Oh yeah. Yes, absolutely. I'm really passionate about cleaning anyway. And so one of the things that the company is going to focus on is real-time cleaning, which ultimately there's not a lot of businesses or any businesses at all in West Michigan that offer hourly cleaning and sanitizing of facilities. And so that's something that we want to focus on so that people feel safe going into these facilities. And we're focusing on venues and bars and local restaurants. So, you know, more, you know, the people that the managers and owners that I've had the opportunity to have a relationship with over the years, partnering with them to make sure that their patrons feel comfortable coming in and out of their facilities. Also, I think that it's just really important for me. Like, honestly, the cleaning industry is a $50 billion industry, and that's before COVID. And so I think that there is a lot of money in it, but it also keeps me connected into the, you know, the nightlife. And, but again, like it's that financial aspect of it, of I can't do much unless I have that. And quite frankly, I'm trying to break generational poverty, and I can't do that by recording a bunch of music, releasing it, and not getting, you know, getting it to where I want to get it. So I had to do a little something different to make sure that I secure that. I gotta make it to the top so I can be my people's people. I'm a leader, no excuses, that's what they counting on me for. Hold the torch, keep it shining, I'm grinding like every day. When you starting from the bottom, ain't no time to be playing games. Systematic oppression made it harder to pave the way. My generation is hungry, making up for them empty plates. From the block cooking weight to the block making plays. Now we're sitting in war rooms at that table making change. And your mother's mama thought that she would never see the day. We not stopping till our ancestors sending kudos from the grave. We not stopping until they give us back every single thing they take, every single thing they took in the country full of crooks. Can I get an amen? Hallelujah. This is
I'm really sorry. Really sorry to hear about your father's death this year.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's I'm still kind of, I don't know. I'm still in the kind of the denial phase a little bit. So it's not easy to talk about it, but yeah, I mean, he was my whole entire world. Like, he moved to Grand Rapids about 8 years ago to live with me. And he just, you know, he found a life in Grand Rapids, and it was just, you know, it was me and him, you know. And it's unfortunate that cancer is, yeah, sucks.
Yeah. Has your father's passing given you some different ideas about what you have to give, or maybe even just what you need to do for yourself?
Absolutely. You know, at his home going, a lot of people came up to me, relatives I didn't even know, said, like, you're the matriarch now. Like, you're going to have to hold the torch. And, you know, I've always taken pride into taking care of my family the best way that I can. But he was the glue, you know, and now that he's gone, I'm definitely going to have to step it up. And, you know, one of the things that my dad was never able to do that he always wanted to do was save money. But he could never do it because everybody would always, you know, hit him up and ask for money, and he would give it, you know, to his, to his sisters and brothers, to his children, to his grandchildren. And he was never able to save money and invest in businesses like he wanted to. And so, again, switching gears and making sure that I'm able to build that financial wealth and break that generational poverty is something that I feel I have to do in order to truly make him proud, you know.
Yeah, and
in a sense, because I know that he's already proud of me, and he said that all the time. With my music, you know, he really, and just the person that I came out to be, you know, I wasn't always this person, and he was really proud of the growth. And, you know, we were like best friends, honestly. And yeah, so but that's something that I do want to focus on, because I know that that's something that he always wanted to do. They've been trying to tell me who to be, eyes wide open, I see everything, remember what they said to me. Ain't gonna be nothing. Yeah. From the bottom, now I'm here, yeah. Getting to this money, ain't no time for me to chill, yeah. Always been a hustler, stay the hell up out my ear, yeah. You ain't doing nothing, but let's be real, yeah. I see everything. So if people are hearing this and they want to find your stuff, what's the best way? Yeah, so that's all for now, and it's on all platforms, right? Apple Music, Tidal, you name it, it's there. Make sure you guys check it out. I have a video out right now titled Free with Stephen Malcolm. And yeah, if you want to see what's next, follow me on Facebook, Instagram at Lady Ace Boogie. Definitely still going to be pushing music. Some of the music that I put out, like the past two albums that I put out, a lot of the songs on there I really didn't give a good push, so I'm going to be doing that, as well as releasing a few of the songs off of the current album. So looking forward to that as well. Yeah.
Linda Telles Aguilar, Lady Ace Boogie, thank you ever so much for all the things that you've been willing to share over the years, including what has got to be an incredibly tough summer. We really appreciate your time talking to us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys.
And that's Stateside for today. The show is produced by Mike Blank, April Van Buren, with our director, Mercedes Mejia. The executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Interns are Catherine Nguyen, Nell Ovett, and Olive Scott. I'm April Baer. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great and safe Labor Day weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday. They've been trying to tell me all about